This episode is brought to you by Libsyn. Planning to start a podcast? Look no further than Libsyn. Libsyn is one of the biggest feature-rich podcast hosting platforms in the world. Libsyn is IAB certified, offers many hosting plans, and you can start for as low as $5 a month. Aspiring podcasters who listen to the show radio can get 1 month free by using the promo code TSR. Use promo code TSR at checkout to get 1 month free.
I'm your host, Andrew.
Hey guys, and I'm Danny.
And this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news. This particular episode, I'm extremely excited about because we're going to be talking about some Unreal stuff for sure. Marvel 1943 and some of the improvements that they're making to textures and all that stuff for Unreal. Of course, the Xbox handheld situation. What does that mean for Xbox? Are they going to finally do it, right? So we'll talk a little bit about that. Some trailers we have on the docket as well. We'll share our reactions to some of the trailers and Overwatch versus Paladins. I know that I am a big Paladins fan, and I do have some nice things to say about Overwatch. I do have some things that may not be so nice that I want to say about Overwatch. So we'll go there. Daniela, how are you feeling today?
Pretty good. There's some stuff I want to talk to you about, but we'll do it for next episode.
Yeah. And I need to definitely catch up on those things for sure. So the first thing that I did see, and we're going to be talking about, Phil Spencer discusses potential Xbox handheld plans, you know, and I definitely want to hear, you know, your thoughts on that, because it's one of those things where it's like, are we actually finally going to see this? Okay. So Xbox gaming boss Phil Spencer has discussed the idea of a Microsoft handheld games device and how Xbox games should play on third-party handheld software. And I'll just stop that. Just I want to hear your thoughts on that. What do you think will happen if we actually see this? Because we're seeing handhelds pop up everywhere now. And what's your take on this?
I think it's crazy. We went from like the Switch being the only handheld, really. I mean, we had the PSP, the PS Vita, and then that went away, and they never, doesn't seem like they have any plans on coming, or PlayStation doesn't really seem to have any plans on having a revitalization of the Vita or PSP. They have, you know, their Portal that's out right now, which I still have mixed feelings about. But it's like, yeah, like you said, that you have all of these companies coming out with their own versions, their own handhelds, and people clamoring to it, and they're all great in their own way, and everybody's figuring out different ways, especially to be able to play, you know, Xbox games on them, PlayStation games on them, in some fashion, in some way. Would I be surprised for an Xbox One? Maybe a little bit, but not as much as you would probably think. Like, I think it would be cool, and there's a potential there for sure. But he, like Phil Spencer also says, he's also wants their games to be able to come out on as many platforms as they possibly can, get into the hands of people. So he's also making it easier for people to be able to play, you know, on the Xbox Game Pass, on the PC version, on their Steam Decks, or whichever version that you have. To make that happen. So I think it's kind of like a little bit of both. I think he's definitely feeling out the layout about people being able to play Xbox games on what they already existingly have. And then, you know, going forward from there. But I see that there's very much a potential of Xbox coming out with one.
Yeah, I think it would be good. I think it would be good. So it says here, Spencer, a keen handheld PC enthusiast, told Polygon that Microsoft was discussing different hardware form factors and things that they could go do to grow the Xbox audience further. So one of the things that I would definitely want to see is like all these stores to be in one place, right? So the Epic one, the Steam one, of course, the Xbox One, if they can actually put all the stores in a handheld, that makes sense. Something very similar to like the Steam Deck or something like that. I think a lot of people will be excited to see that. I think the Rogue, the ROG is doing really well. I think a lot of people are talking about that because that particular handheld has, you know, Hall Effect sticks in them, which is the standard, you know, at this point. So I think I'm pretty excited to see that, because although I'm not necessarily playing a lot of the Xbox games on the console themselves, you know, a lot of the games I'm playing on the PC, to see that being an option, or even the actual G Cloud, the handheld there, I would love to see what they do with this particular development, and if they actually, you know, release a product that we can touch, you know?
Yeah, I'm very much like, I like cloud services, but I'm not really sold on the cool cloud gaming. I think that's what PlayStation really kind of loses me. I like what Nintendo does. I like what you know, Steam Deck does, where it's just like, it's there. You just download it there. You don't have to worry about internet service or Wi-Fi or hotspot or any of that. I like that. So if Xbox goes that route, I kind of hope it's in that terms of being able to play, but then having the cloud services to, you know, save your game, be able to transfer that into your, you know, your console or your PC, and vice versa. Like, I'm totally down for that.
Yeah, 100%. I'm looking forward to seeing where they land with this, because it's still one of those things, like, even when you look at, and I know we talk about controls all the time, I'm going to try to make this rant a little bit shorter, okay? Because I love talking about the controllers and the technology that we've seen over the last couple of years, even now, right? That Xbox is gradually implementing, you know, things that are becoming standards in the controllers today. So I would love to see them do the same approach for the handheld. We're watching closely, right? We're making notes what's actually working, and then implement the things that are going to be exciting for the player base or the individuals who are waiting for a handheld for Microsoft, from Microsoft, right? So there's that. Any additional thoughts on that one?
No, I mean, I feel like it's a good potential. It's pretty much my final thoughts on it. And I wouldn't necessarily be surprised. I think if anything, just the way it looks, it's designed, and probably the price point will be the surprise for me.
Right. So if they were to put something out and you have the option to mold all the current handhelds into the perfect handheld coming from Microsoft, which handhelds would you fuse together to make it?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't gotten my hands on all of them yet.
Well, me neither, but I'll give you my thoughts, but go ahead.
Oh, I don't know which one I would mold. I like kind of overall, I think a lot of the current handhelds have kind of gone with that, you know, Nintendo Switch kind of shape and size. I'm okay with that. It very much reminds me of my Sega, but I don't know if I would want it to have just detachable controllers. Like, that's the one thing about my Switch. Like, I know there's other controllers, but what comes with it out of the box? I'm getting old. Arthritis, those controllers are too small for me. I don't think I care for it to be detachable.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
That's a good one, right?
That is a good one. I kind of want to stick with my Steam Deck because I love the way that feels in my hand. But then the Portal, the way that it's set up too, I kind of like the curvature. That's difficult.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It is super difficult.
So based on what I've seen for the products that are currently out, I will probably fuse the Steam Deck with the ROG device. For features and, you know, how people perceive the actual product, right? So I don't necessarily hear people speak negatively on the Steam Deck. They've done quite well. And the ROG device, that's another one I hear people, like, you know, speak highly of, right? So I would fuse those two together and potentially make, you know, the ultimate Xbox handheld. So, you know, Phil Spencer, if you're listening, you know, I may even tag you on this. That's a good way to start if you're considering the handheld market for sure. All right. So next thing we have is Bad Boys Ride or Die. The official trailer, did watch that. Your thoughts first?
Part of me hopes it's not a final, but I feel like there's certain series, no matter how much I love them, they got to end at some point. It's very interesting, the storyline that they're going on with this. But if there's one thing, I love Bad Boys. I love all of the movies. So yes, I'm going to go watch this. Comes out June 7th. But there's just something about the dynamic of Will Smith and Martin Lawrence that just works so well. And I couldn't think of any other actor that I would choose to replace either one of them. Like, I can't think of who would be a better comedic partner for Will Smith in this movie. And the same thing, if they had to replace Will Smith, who would be the great partner that just melts really well with Martin Lawrence. I think they just both work so well. So to see this, you know, they're coming out with another one, to see this trailer, about it.
I'm not mad either. I did love it as well. So if they were to hand off the series to other actors, like if this was the last one, I think it wouldn't surprise me if Kevin Hart was added in one of the potential movies in the future. Right? So if they go, this would be four or five?
Four, I think.
This would be four? Okay, so if it's four, let's say between five and six, it wouldn't surprise me if they add Kevin Hart at some point. I don't know. I could see that happening. That's not necessarily a good or bad thing. It's a neutral thing, because if you're still looking for individuals to have, you know, a comedic chemistry in some way, shape or form, that wouldn't necessarily be a bad deal if you added, you know, Kevin Hart in one of the future films, right? Now, the other thing too, you know, if Kevin Hart decides to, I guess, be a cousin of one of the main actors, right, that they could, you know, play off in that way, you know, a brother or cousin that they haven't necessarily talked about in a long time that finally shows up, you know, write that into the story. You never know, right? Because we have, what, 10 Fast and Furious movies at this point?
Yeah.
Right? So they can figure out. They can figure out a way to write, you know, the story for it to make sense for us to keep watching that particular series. I mean, technically, with Bad Boys, it can go another three movies. It could.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm still trying to picture the chemistry with Kevin Hart. I mean, I love Kevin Hart. I think he's hilarious. I love what he does. I love the movies he's in. But then in with those characters, I think off camera, he probably has great chemistry with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. But as an actor in a movie, as a character, I guess he could be like a cousin of Martin. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
I guess I can see that. I also can see him like if whatever in, you know, these what ifs two additional movies, you know, something happens to Martin's character, and then in comes Kevin Hart.
Right.
You got to save my cousin here. I don't know if I'm completely sold on that. Like, I think it would be very interesting.
Right. It would be.
I love them as a duo.
Yeah. It would be. So it's something that can potentially happen, you know, depending on how they decide to cast. But the other thing to consider as well, when it comes to like podcast, Kevin Hart had, has the Gold Mine podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Which was rebranded to Gold Mines from, I think, Comedy Gold Mines, which was a subgenre, specific genre. So now there's a pool of guests that he knows personally and has, you know, a good relationship with. If they were to pull from that, right, that's an easy sell, you know, for the next four, five movies. You see what I'm saying? So there's chemistry there that's already built in, and especially like, you know, with all the podcasts that exist in the world and stuff like that. So, but I loved it. I loved it. I've loved the series ever since the first one, the first movie. And I'm going to watch every single one that they put out for sure.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. For sure. So this one, I don't know how you feel about this one. The next one, Pirates of the Caribbean producer confirms franchise is getting a reboot. What's your take on that?
Are we running out of ideas? Are we running out of stuff? Like, is there already time for a reboot? I love Pirates of the Caribbean simply because that was one of my favorite rides at Disney. I love pirates. And then you had Johnny Depp in it. and it was just a lot of fun. And when they're, you know, originally came out to theaters, me and my friends would get dressed up as pirates and go and watch it on opening night. That was a lot of great memories for me. I don't know if it needs a reboot. I really don't.
When was the last movie? Do we remember?
It was a while ago. It was a while ago. I can't give you. I will go and look that up. That's the power of the internet at your fingertips.
Yeah, no, I'm curious when the last movie was. And what is the year span that we say, hey, this deserves a reboot?
So the first one came out in 2003.
Okay.
And then the next one came out in 2006. And then a quick turnaround in 2007. Then another one in 2011. And then the last one was in 2017.
Okay.
So
2017 till now, I mean, that's not bad. So when they started remaking I know this is like a just a crazy angle. When they started remaking the Resident Evil, do you think enough time had passed by for them to start remaking them?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so what would you say, six, eight years or?
No, Resident Evil was far more than 6 to 8 years, but.
Yeah, what would the number be for you? What would the number be for you though? Would it be 5 years or more than that?
It depends on the series, to be honest.
I know. It really depends on the series.
I know. Because I don't think that even something that is great and awesome and you loved, I don't think it necessarily always means it needs to have a reboot or a remake. Like right now, I know that they're going to be rebooting the Neverending Story, and I still don't know how to feel about that one. But
I'm excited.
I don't know if it needs one, but I also don't know if it's because it's connected to my nostalgia factor and I thought it was perfect the first time. Right. I am slightly open to it. I just don't know if I want them to do it. But then, you know, Labyrinth. Labyrinth is a fantastic movie that came out in, what, the 80s. That's like almost 40 years. I don't ever want them to ever touch it ever. I don't want nobody to touch Labyrinth. Like, leave that movie alone. So now you're looking at Pirates of the Caribbean here that came out. First movie came out 21 years ago. Still a lot of fun to watch. It's still a great movie to me. But at the same time, for me, and I don't know if that's because I'm old or what, but it's still pretty fresh in my mind that I'm like, you really need it? Which,
why not?
I wish you watch X-Men 97.
I'm going to start.
That's what's coming to my mind right now, but that's not really exactly a remake either.
No, but we'll put that in there. That's definitely on my list to watch this week. Definitely.
Yeah. So, I think the reason why it still is fresh in my mind, even though the first one came out 21 years ago, you had the latest one that came out only 7 years ago. So that's, I think, why it's still relatively fresh in my mind, that I feel like you really need to do this. But then you have all of these things that happen. And, you know, you had the whole Johnny Depp trial, everything that happened there, and, you know, Disney letting him go, which he just made an amazing Jack. I'm not opposed to it because I like pirates. Can I just have Johnny Depp back in there?
I don't know. I don't know if you're going to get Johnny back. I don't know if you're going to get Johnny back, but yeah, I do know that you're going to, like, you know, watch it for sure. Cause they're pirates.
Possibly, but they have to be good pirates.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. And the casting is going to be important too, especially for a series that's so iconic in so many ways, right?
Yeah. It really does. They chose some amazing actors. Orlando Bloom was fantastic in there, especially just coming off of, you know, Lord of the Rings at that time. But also with this whole reboot, it's like, I kind of don't want them to retell the same story. Like, maybe just a different story. something. I don't know.
We'll see.
I don't know if I want them touching it, but I'm a little bit more open with them rebooting that than I am on the previously one, like said ones like Labyrinth, Don't Ever Touch. Like David Bowie will always be the Goblin King to me. There's nobody that could ever replace him. Nobody that could ever change my mind about that. And the Never Ending Story.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. I want to see exactly what they do with that one. Never Ending Story, you know, definitely a classic. So pretty excited to see what they do with that particular series. So those are the pirate stuff. That's pirate news for you guys. Okay, next thing that we have is, yes, you have to install Battle.net to play Diablo 4 via PC Game Pass. Any thoughts on that?
So they made that entire process really super complicated. So you start the process in your Xbox Game Pass, your app that you have the desktop, then it makes you download Battle.net if you don't already have it. If you already have it and you're logged in, you're good. You can just open up and play. I feel like it was a very convoluted process to make that happen, to be get people wanting to play it if they didn't already own it and played it on, you know, Battle.net. Which I feel like there's ways that could have made it easier for people without having to download that. Because yes, on Battle.net, you can connect many different accounts. I had to open up and make sure I knew all of the accounts that you could attach to your Battle.net. I opened up mine. You have Apple, you have Facebook, you have Google, you have the Xbox Network, you have Nintendo, you have PlayStation, you have Steam, and you have Twitch on there.
That
you can
That's connect a lot.
All of them. And then it's like, Xbox, why not give that option to like also just like make sure that's connected on both sides. You link your account on both sides so that you can just play it from just, you know, the Xbox PC Game Pass app right there. Like, why not make that happen? Or if you already have Battle.net and you have, you know, your subscription service, you already have your account tied, why not just simple process? I don't understand why it has to be so convoluted like that.
Do you think that stays? Do you think they're going to streamline it in the future? Or what do you think they're going to do with that?
I think they will streamline it in the future and make it easier. Just right now, this initial, it kind of seems a little bit. I mean, people are going to play it. If they really want to play it, they'll go through all the steps. They will do right. all the steps. They will do all of the
They things will. And they will. They
do it with internally complaining.
But they will play it.
Yeah, they will. So I hope there's a smoother process to it.
Now, have you tried Diablo? Are you looking forward to it?
I haven't yet, but I do have some friends that have been trying to get me to play Diablo since 2.
Okay. So they haven't succeeded yet. That's what that sounds like.
No, they haven't.
Okay. They're trying.
There's only one person that is like so close to it. She's like, I will come to your house. I will install it for you. All you have to do is press play. And
they're trying. You gotta give them.
I invited her to my house.
Give them credit for trying.
Oh, no, I know. I love my friends. So I've invited her to my house because she actually lives on a different island. But sometimes when she visits, I like, I'll just. Don't bring up gaming with her. Maybe she'll just forget. I'm not opposed to it. I really can't add any more games to my list right now. I really, really can't. I'm struggling just to make time to play Infinite Wealth right now. And that is a very slow process that's happening.
Yeah, your backlog for games is extraordinary, okay? It's pretty crazy. But as far as content creation, I definitely want to talk to you about that. As many of you see, I'm holding this mic. This is not the typical mic that I use for this conversation here. You have the Behringer 8500, right? And I think that mic is absolutely fantastic. We've used it, you know, at E3 and all those things. This is the SM58. This is an iconic mic, and it sounds great. And there's other mics that you can use and stuff like that. So what I wanted to do is pretty much, since we've been doing this for a long time, you've been streaming for a long time, creating podcasts with me. I think we've done at this point 300 plus episodes together or whatever, you know, but now I really wanted to find a way to pretty much list every single thing I've used since 2009 and put it in one place. Right. So I created this document that pretty much has everything, all the software, all the microphones, all the audio interfaces, some keyboards are in there. And this particular list has everything that I've used since I started doing content creation. So for many of you, I'm pretty new, but we've been at this for quite some time. You know, we've done the E3 circuit. We've done, you know, podcasts for a long time. We've done some video stuff for a long time. And it's at a point now where this is the right thing to do when it comes to amassing all this information. And what's the point of amassing all this information if we can't give it to you guys? So this list is going to be in the description below. This is my all-star audio video list of everything that I've used over the years. And I think that you are going to love this list, benefit from it for sure. So some of the things that I have in there, I definitely want to mention some of the things so you guys get an idea. So audio interfaces, I used my Onocaster, that's in there. SM58 is in there. Samsung Q2U is a mic that, the list actually goes from, you know, price points from least to greatest. I know some of the equipment, you know, off the bat that people aren't going to be able to, like, you know, get it off the bat because they're building their channels, you know, for the first time. So, or, you know, podcasts for the first time. So, you know, I took account for that. So SM58, I believe that's $99. Your mic, the 8500 by Behringer, I believe that's $25. I checked the price earlier today. That mic to sound that good, right, on the field and in a studio, to be $25, to me, is still ridiculous, you know, by way of a price point. So this list is pretty exhaustive. Got some lighting in there, cameras in there, C920X by Logitech, you know, just giving you an example of one of the cameras that's in there. As far as headphones, the Audio-Technica ATH-M20X. So that's in there. So I made the list pretty exhaustive, but at the same time, it's everything in one place and it is subject to updates. A link in the description below. Definitely check that out. Grab that. It is my gift to you. And I want to make sure. And as far as, like, you know, software, of course, Canva's in there, Gemini's in there, ChatGPT's in there. Opus Clips is in there. We use that on a regular basis here. Stream Deck, Stream Labs, OBS or OBS, depending on your taste, you know, and some other things in there. So some surprises. So definitely check that out. That is yours. Daniela, on your side, you have the 8500 for the microphone. You have some Astro A40s that looks like, you know, on your headset right now. Your audio interface, what do you use currently?
Right now it's a Go XLR. It's still, you know, my tried and tested. I've had that for, I don't know how many years now. However, I am thinking about changing it out, seeing what else is out there. I'm not having any problems with it right now. But Helicon's kind of gone a little bit wayward. I mean, the support isn't there as much, but it is a solid piece of product. However, with the production of it, I don't know if they're even producing anymore. I know you can buy it on Amazon, but it is way more expensive than what I originally bought it for. I think I bought this one for $300. And oh man, I think I first saw them at TwitchCon 2019, I think it was, is when they announced this and they had this all out, and I was very quick to, like, get that interview, get a little demo, and then buy it.
Yeah,
that's how much I will, like, when I was, like, super stoked on it. I didn't even ask if I could just get a review one of it. I just went and bought it. But right now, that is what I'm using, and I've still been very happy with it. I do have, like, I'm using the Behringer for this, but my primary one is, I am having a lapse of memory right here, but I do have it off to the side right now. I'm not using it. It is Logitech, so I do have this one. This is my primary one that I have attached to my XLR. But for the purpose of this, I don't even know if we really told anybody that we made a transition. We're not even using webcams right now. I'm using my phone for the camera.
Yeah. So the phone transition has been really interesting, right? So, and I think that what it allows us to do is to be a little bit more flexible on actually recording the podcast. So after we do, you know, this particular, you know, show, of course it lives on YouTube and then it goes into the podcast feeds as well, but this will definitely live on YouTube. So with some traveling coming up for myself, you know, I definitely wanted to still be able to record the podcast on the go. So that's why this mic is going to come in handy. The audio adapter that I use for this is going to come in handy. Of course, my phone, you know, we pretty much take our phones everywhere these days. So that's going to be pretty dope to still do the show and still provide the information, you know, that happened that week, whatever that week is, for you guys to still get the content that we want to put out. So yeah, I think the transition is a change. You know, because there isn't any, you know, like B-roll or anything like that. It is, you know, the, hey, this happened this week, let's just talk about it. And I still believe that there's some value there. And it's definitely a good tool that YouTube has provided for us to even create in this manner, by way of connecting, you know, different pieces to our phones and still make it sound really good for the individuals who listen to the podcast this way or just the audio, right? So I think it's really good. And I kind of like to change a little bit. How do you feel about it?
I like trying out new things. I don't think I have a problem. But I think I like that, especially for me. You're talking about traveling soon and being able to still do our show on a regular basis and not having to carry around everything. For me, I'm going to be like, I'm preparing to move. Eventually, my entire PC setup has to be taken down. I don't know how long that'll be out of commission until, you know, I get set up. But having my phone regularly available, we use a Saramonic. That is such a fantastic company. If you haven't gone and check out what they have to offer, we are using Saramonic adapter to an XLR cable to be able to use these mics. It's just fantastic. And I mean, if nobody's really brought it up, I don't know why we didn't mention it, but it's a different thing. And it's always nice to see. And I think that also proves a point that you don't need the most expensive equipment to do a lot of these things or to, you know, start your content creation journey. You don't need to. And I think we've said this so many times over the years, the last decade or so here. You don't need the $1,000, $2,000 camera. You already have a $1,000 phone there that probably has a fantastic camera. They're Saramonic. I don't remember how much you originally paid for these adapters.
$39. Yeah, around that price. Yeah.
Really nice entry price point. You have the cables, which I think were like $10 to $20.
Yep.
And then, you know, my specific Behringer mic was only $25. I am choosing, I think in the last several weeks, our YouTube videos, I was using the front facing camera and then I turned it around and I'm using the back facing camera. I kind of like the quality a bit better. It is a little bit harder to see, but hey, I think the video quality is nice. But the same thing goes, you know, going out to events or just, you know, just doing interviews on the spot, regardless of what type of content creation that you are making, there are means to the end there to be able to record content. And if you don't like the wired setup, although this doesn't, I actually bought this. I bought wireless. I can't believe we're just doing product reviews and stuff right now. So I actually bought this wireless lavalier mic on Amazon, which works fantastic for recording video. It attaches Bluetooth. It comes with a pair. It has a receiver that goes through. They have it for USB-C. They also have it for lightning cable if you're, you know, you have iPhone. But considering the newer iPhones have USB-C now, that shouldn't be a problem anymore. You can have a conversation. It comes out nice, crisp, clear. It has noise canceling in it. I'm not using this right now specifically because I haven't figured out how to use it for Instagram Live, and I got really frustrated with it. I already have a solution. But if you're recording content with your phone, these are fantastic, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of different variations from your favorite, you know, TikTokers or Instagram Reel content creators using some type of wireless mic. And most of them are the Rode mics, but those are like several hundred dollars. Whereas the one that I bought and I've been testing is, I think I bought it for $40. And I think it's great. I think it's awesome.
Right.
So, I don't know what else it is. I mean, if I was using the rest of my PC, the rest of my setup, I do have two cams. I have the Elgato Face Cam. I have a Logitech one. They both look amazing in quality. I do not use, you know, I don't use the Sony cameras. I would love to, but but that's still an investment that I'm not quite ready to do yet. I'm perfectly happy with the two cams I have and my phone.
No, it does work really well. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. That does remind me of one more thing that I do have that I have to test out still and check out that I don't think I posted anywhere. Logitech did send me their Mevo cameras, which you can use with your phone, and you can link up to three of them. And they have an app for it that, you know, does recording, does record audio, has a built-in camera for it. But
yeah, I definitely want, I want to hear about that. And once you start setting that up and stuff like that, I definitely want to hear your take on that, because.
Yeah. I have a bit more testing to do with this, but I think what is cool is it does have a built-in mic for it. The audio sounds pretty good. It's really hard to balance out though, but it has a USB-C, which I have tested with the wireless lavalier that I have and it works, and it works really nicely. But yeah, you can essentially either use it with your phone. You can have up to three cameras. I only have one, so I can only test with one. But you can also set it up to be able to use with your PC. So if you're a type of content creator that likes the, you know, the multi-camera views, this might be something that you want to look into. It is basically a webcam, but it's a wireless webcam.
I have a question for you.
Looks really nice. What's up?
Question for you coming from the chat. What's up, chat? Appreciate y'all hanging out. If you haven't already done so, make sure you like, subscribe. This is where we do our podcast here. We also have the audio feeds link in the description below. So the main reason that we spent some time here is because I created a content creation list of all the audio and video gear that I've put out that I've used since 2009. So the question for you, Danielle, can vegans eat animal crackers? That's the question from the chat.
It depends. Did they read the ingredients to the animal crackers? I think that's the only way that they can feel okay with eating animals. Now,
interesting.
If a vegan watched me eat animal crackers, just know that I dissect them first. I like to eat the feet first, then the ears, and then I'll slowly eat away at the head and then the rest of the body.
No, you do not. Do you actually do that?
I do. I don't know why. Oh, I do that with gummy bears too. I do that with gummy bears as well too. Like I will, with gummy bears, I will eat the feet first, then the hands, then the ears, and then I chop off the head. I'll eat the head last and then I'll eat the body.
That is crazy.
Clearly, I am not vegan, but I'm sure a vegan will find something in animal crackers that has some type of ingredient in it that is not friendly for them to eat. And then somewhere, I'm sure there are vegan animal crackers that exist somewhere.
No, I appreciate that. Make sure you like and subscribe if you haven't done so already. Next thing that we have is Horizon Forbidden West. Solid PC debut, not enough to beat Zero Dawn. Any thoughts on that?
I'm not too sure. I mean, usually the first one of the games always does the best. I'm not saying that the sequels or what comes after it are always terrible, but I don't know if they ever reach that same success. Like, as much as I'm looking forward to Hellblade, I'm not even quite sure. Like, I have high expectations and excitement for number two, but will it meet that same one that the first one did? I don't know.
Do you think it's too early to tell, though? Or do you think that we're supposed to look at these numbers right away? I think it depends on the game, right? And the excitement for it.
I think so. I think it depends.
Yeah.
I'm sure those numbers will greatly improve and it'll be just as great as the first one. It just might be a little bit of a slow buildup. We've 100%. Had so many great games come out on PC. So, or just in gaming in general.
Right. I do agree with that. Yeah, it's been a good run, especially if you're on PC now. Like, I don't necessarily recommend, I don't know how you feel about this now, with a PS5 being out, Xbox being out, and of course, new models for the systems are going to be coming out in the next maybe 2 years or whatever the projection is, right? I don't necessarily recommend people to get consoles these days. Like, how do you feel about that? I know that we don't even have that here, just random, but what do you think? Do you actually tell people, hey, you should get a PS5 or hey, you should get an Xbox now? Because I know I don't.
It depends on who the person is, to be honest, and why they're buying it or why they're looking at it. If it's another parent that knows, like, that doesn't really game, but knows that I do, and they ask me and it's for their kids, I would tell them to go get a console, and I'll probably most likely tell them to go get an Xbox, to be honest, because I'm sure most of that kid's friends probably has an Xbox. Now if it's from another gamer, like likewise age gamer, probably not, because we have adult money now. So I'm just be like, go build yourself a PC and welcome to the motherland.
Yeah. So with the consoles, I know there's a comment in chat that says Xbox isn't making consoles. Actually, they're still considering making them because it's still an entry point for individuals to get into their ecosystem before they start doing the Xbox Game Pass and the other things. Now, what's going to be interesting is how close to a PC is going to be, right? The actual machine, right? Because it seems like we're blurring the lines between what a console is and what a PC is now, because of how the services are being put on the consoles themselves and how the machines are being built, right? So I think we can all agree there that the next iteration of whatever Xbox is going to put out is going to be something very similar to how we're enjoying the internal components of a PC, but it will still be a closed architecture, right? For that particular platform, where the PC is open architecture with the things that we're able to do with it and change out and upgrade and all that stuff, right? So it's going to be fun to see exactly what they do there when it comes to console production. All right. So next thing that we have is X-Defiant developer denies delay due to chasing Call of Duty. Call of Duty is a fantastic game. And I know we kind of talked about this briefly before we got here. So from Call of Duty 1, 2, didn't pay attention to it. Call of Duty 3 caught my attention. Call of Duty 4, lost a lot of time and hours and days on Call of Duty 4. Okay. And then, of course, we have the remake world of Call of Duty now. We have Modern Warfare 3 that's out. 2 came out last year. And it's a world that is amazing. I prestige a couple of times already. I'm having fun playing Call of Duty. And if X-Defiant is chasing Call of Duty, then they have challenges ahead, right? So definitely want to hear your thoughts on that, and I'll add a little bit more context.
I don't know how I feel about this, because every shooter is going to be compared, especially if it's first person, is always going to be compared to Call of Duty. And I think that's just a sad thing, because I feel like there's certain games that come, you know, that have great potential to be something else that's more, that can change the game, but they don't, because they stick within this Call of Duty format, because that's what everybody is comfortable with. I can't play Call of Duty anymore. I can't play X-Defiant. I know it's a first person. I get really sick playing. It's very sad. But I did see some gameplay footage, and I can see where it does. It really does pull those kind of Call of Duty elements that a lot of people like. I mean, going through, they did say that, you know, they're just making, you know, some fine tunes. They didn't add really anything to it. They're just right, fine tuning it, polishing it. But then nobody, I think it's also just not wanting to be compared. I think if I was developing a game and I thought it was something, happened to be a first person, it happened to be a shooter, and the first thing people are going to say is like, oh, that's like COD. Oh, COD did this. Oh, COD did that. But you have your own little spin on it, and you have your own little polish. I think that would kind of, for me, it would break my heart. I mean, right, they say that imitation is the greatest form of flattery, but then at the same time, like, if you're not trying to copy them, but people are saying like, hey, you're just trying to be, you know, the next best thing to COD. I don't know. I think that's sad. I mean, unless they admit it at some point and said, like, yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to do, which is a different skin on it, which I don't think anybody's going to say that.
And so a couple of things. Call of Duty trying to keep up with Fortnite? I don't know. I think that's a stretch. I know there are a lot of microtransactions in both games, and I don't necessarily get pulled to, I guess, purchase anything. You know, I like the standard route, you know, for, you know, how I play Call of Duty. I just load up a 24/7 playlist and then go from there. I don't necessarily play Warzone like that. So I guess I'll just put that to the side. But there are skins that you can unlock that you don't necessarily have to pay for when you're playing Call of Duty right now. And I currently play it right now. So going back to this particular topic here. So Call of Duty is the standard. I don't know why it seems like companies don't want to be associated with something that inspired them, right? Call of Duty is the standard, right? So I know the other day we were talking about, you know, why don't we see another Uncharted 2 multiplayer? At least I was complaining about that, right? But when I play Call of Duty now, you know, I feel like that itch is being satisfied through Call of Duty, even though I'll never potentially see a Uncharted multiplayer 2, which I love that multiplayer. So I think that's being satisfied there, right? But in terms of, you know, chasing Call of Duty, Call of Duty comes out every year, relatively around the same time. And we all know that it's going to be the game that everybody's going to look to make an FPS game. I don't know if why, you know, it's not even an argument anymore. The thing that you shouldn't do is to make sure that when you're releasing a title, is that you don't release a FPS title in the same week window as Call of Duty. You know, Titanfall has learned that lesson the hard way. So whether it's skins, whether it's microtransactions, whether it's maps, whether it's remade maps or whatever it is, every FPS, in my opinion, they're looking to be inspired by the standard. And the standard is definitely, you know, Call of Duty every single year, whether you like the dogs, you didn't like the dogs, whether you like, you know, running on walls, whether you like verticality, whatever it was still Call of Duty every single year. So those are my thoughts. Any additional thoughts?
No, Call of Duty is your realm of everything.
It is the standard. It is the standard. And that's just, you know, what it is when it comes to that. Next thing I'm a little irritated with, but I think we're going to talk about this. I'm going to try to be fair. Look at it on both sides. Overwatch 2 PvE content scrapped as devs are denied bonuses for the first time, report claims. And okay, I definitely want you to go first on this one, and we'll fill out, you know, some of the gaps.
Why me? All right. So before, I believe just going off of this, I don't know people's bonuses. Like, I'm just struggling to just get paid myself. But going through this article, it does say that before, it just like it used to be company-wide, everybody got, you know, piece of that pie over there. They shared their profit. You got a bonus, regardless of however, whatever game that you were working on did. So now they changed it where it is. I think they changed it last year. Whereas you're given a bonus based off of how well the game you are purposely did. So, you know, Overwatch apparently didn't do so well. So they got no bonuses. Whereas you have WoW, they got theirs. What was the other game? I forget already right now. They got, you know, a piece of the pie over there. But I don't know. Like, I understand that mindset. Like, but does, like, there's got to be, like, team leads and people even above them that approved whatever, you know, content they were working on to come out to be pushed out there. Like, I hope they're not getting a bonus. I hope they're also in that same realm of like, hey, these people that work within your team that are below you, you're not getting anything. Some reason I always feel that there's somehow, some way, there's some project manager somewhere that was charged with something, always gets something special, and he's not included into this thing, or she's not included into this thing, that gets something out of it still. So I hope that still applies to them. It always sucks to not, you know, get your bread when you're hoping for it and you're so used to it.
Right.
But I kind of understand why. I can understand why. And it's funny that the interview that I kind of think of that popped into my head was with Ronda Rousey. I think it was an interview that she was doing where they were asked, it's like, oh, are you getting as much as you're getting paid because, you know, XYZ or top female, you know, UFC fighter. And I believe her answer was, they pay me as much as I do because I bring in the money.
Interesting.
Them, the most money. That's why I get paid the way that I do. I do not bring, like, by I'm referencing her in where she is saying, like, I bring in them, I make them more money. So, you know, it's reflective of that. So I can understand that. I don't know. It always sucks. It always sucks, especially in the, you know, the gaming world, in where, you know, people are getting laid off. They're needing that money. It's expensive. Our economy sucks. So I can kind of see both sides of it, where they would be disappointed as employees. But then I also see it from the company standpoint in that perspective.
All right, so I'm going to take the consumer. I don't know anything about bonuses. I don't know anything about anything that's happening internally on the financial side. I'm not going to take that angle. I'm going to take the angle of, why does Overwatch seems like it's a trash game now and nobody cares for it, right? If I'm not on Twitch and I'm not on Twitter, well, let's keep Twitter. If I'm on Twitter, I don't really see people like talking about Overwatch 2 like it's the greatest thing that ever came out. But I do remember the feelings and emotion that surrounded Overwatch when it first came out. It seems like everyone was talking about Overwatch when it first came out. And that same, you know, lightning in a bottle feeling that they talked about with Overwatch, I do still see that when they're referring to a game like Paladins. And some people say, well, you know, you can't make that comparison because, you know, they're almost like two different games because they have different characters. But they're both hero shooters, right? And whether the install base or the player base, and I'll be fair, I was talking to somebody on Twitter, and they were like, well, the player base for Paladins is, you know, 5,000. And they were wrong, okay? It was 3,500, okay? It was lower, right? But even for it being lower, I still see individuals be more excited for Paladins than they are for talking about anything Overwatch. Who talks about Overwatch? And it's unfair.
Initial friends that I saw that wanted to play Overwatch,
right?
I don't hear them. I see them playing Fortnite a whole lot more.
Some of the big players left. Some individuals who had content specifically around Overwatch only when Overwatch 2 came out, they changed, you know, the games that they were playing to play another game because of whatever support, whether it was the esports, you know, side of it or whatever. You know, a lot of folks aren't necessarily supporting, you know, Overwatch 2 like they supported the first Overwatch, right? So there's that. Now, is it fair to compare Overwatch to Paladins? Maybe, maybe not. But when it comes to be fair, if I were to defend Overwatch, when it comes to their shorts and the animation and their voice acting and those things that they put out, I don't think anyone can really compete with that. When it comes to Overwatch and shorts and introducing new characters and stuff like that. And to that, you know, level of production and, you know, voice acting and emotion. And even the last one I watched, I don't remember the name of the character, but at the end, when the character saved everybody in the hallway, and then the mom was crying that, you know, the daughter was so like, you know, like, oh, I'm so proud of you. And then she was crying at the end or whatever. I don't remember Kimiko. That's a stretch. That's a stretch for a name of a character. I just use a character from The Boys, but that's not the name. But that particular thing was so moving to me, right? By way of a short and how the production value. So shout outs to Overwatch for doing that. But outside of that, what else are they doing? What else are they doing? Right? So people aren't going to get what they're supposed to get when it comes to the bonuses and stuff like that. And that's not fair, especially if they're working hard to make sure that the game is the best thing that they put out for the hero shooter category, you know, and it is a beautiful game. Now, I'm not going to say I didn't download it. I did. I didn't play it as much as I played Paladins, though. Now, I'm just being fair. They're both good games. Some people will be Team Paladin, some people will be Team Overwatch, and that's fine. But you can't take away for the quality and production that they've done for the shorts and their animation. That's, I don't know anyone is really competing with that. But Paladins, though, I don't know. Paladins has a special place in my heart. And I don't know. I just love it. So yeah, yes, there goes your bias. And that's fine. But scrapping something means that you're not doing well. And whatever the PR needs to be, maybe they need to do a documentary for Overwatch to showcase how great the series is for individuals to actually see it again from a lens of, I forgot how great this game is. I forgot how great the characters are. Maybe you need a documentary, you know, at the end of the year, you know, fourth quarter before we get out of here, you know, for 2025, you release a documentary of, you know, how great Overwatch is. As a game, as esports, as a culture, as, you know, the people that work behind it and stuff like that, maybe you'll get a bump or a emotional reboot for people to actually visit the game and look at it and give it a little bit, you know, more of a chance that they're doing now. But right now, from a consumer who barely plays the game and looking at the landscape, I don't see people excited about Overwatch like they used to be.
No, I can agree with you. I don't see anybody really talking about it. I'm sure there are some diehards that are still playing it and they're still all for it, but I don't see nobody talking about it. I don't see anybody posting about it. I don't even think the content creators I see that play a lot of shooters or PvP games playing it anymore. Like, I don't, like my friends who personally was super excited for Overwatch 2, they're not on it. They're back on Fortnite.
Yeah, I'm curious. If you ever get a chance to ask them why. And maybe we could do a part two to this. I would be curious.
I have. It's not as fun for them as it was in Overwatch 1. That was their biggest
thing. There you go.
And the fact that it's also on top of the amount of content that's available. Fortnite has been popping out stuff left and right. They've always done that. And it just keeps pulling people back in. And I don't know how they keep up with all of their content that they're coming out with, their skins, their events, all of these things. But I hope that team is getting a great bonus. They just really work hard.
100%. Yeah. And I think that, you know, even with the recent updates from Unreal, we can kind of touch on that a little bit in a second. But Fortnite, you know, people still are excited about it, whether, you know, it helped them build their career and they're, you know, they've done products and now they're just playing Fortnite because it's fun with their homies and stuff like that. People are still playing a game and they're still excited about it, but they don't, that same excitement for Fortnite, you're not seeing that in Overwatch. And that's unfortunate. You know, I know I kind of beat up the game a little bit, but I'm just being realistic. It is a beautiful game, but I don't know. I'm not excited to play it as much as I turn on Paladins. I turn on Paladins, man. It just gets me going. You know what I mean? There's something special about that game. So if you haven't, definitely check it out. It's free. So there's that. Resident Evil 9 will be open world. Allegedly, I have to say that because that's the leakers, you know, info. So you're a big Resident Evil person. I do not play survival games, horror games. What's your take on that?
I'm open to it if it's true, but you know how I feel about leaking stuff already. Oh, man. I mean, is there some truth to it? It seems like it's plausible. I guess that's the whole next venture that Resident Evil can offer is this open world adventure there. Don't know if I want it. I'm not sure.
I mean, side quest.
I guess so.
Yeah. Main quest, side quest, open world, fast travel. I mean, what's the cookie cutter thing now, right? That's part of it, right? Fast travel,
yeah,
side quest, travel. Main quest.
I hope it's not. The thing is, I hope it's not too big of that thing that you need those things. I think the best part about Resident Evil is not having, you know, this fast travel. You just magically show up. It just, I don't know. For me, Resident Evil is going down that same hallway several different times for the same exact or different puzzles. That kind of make it thrilling. And then sometimes when you go down there, you know, it's like something different happens. I'm not opposed to it. I think it'll be cool. And I think it's possibly the next evolution for Resident Evil. But I don't think I want it to be like there's no way that I would ever want like a Witcher open world or a Breath of the Wild type of open world. Like, I want it to be a bit more open, but I don't think it needs to be like fast travel.
Do you think it's overdue? According to Chad, do you think it's overdue? Yeah, I do believe that Fortnite is a household staple for sure. I mean, every year, you know, Fortnite seems to get better. But do you think open world for Resident Evil is overdue?
I don't know about overdue. Expected, possibly overdue. No, I don't think I can be. I don't think it's quite overdue yet. I think it's definitely something expected as part of that whole change and just expanding on that world.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I'm going to wait to see if you play it, and that's how I'm going to see it, right? So they're going to have the trailers, of course, teasers and stuff like that. They'll probably do like a live stream that showcases what the open world is and what to expect from it, right? So there's that. We'll probably see that. Of course, we do see Destiny doing the live streams for what's upcoming for the Onslaught mode, which is their Horde mode. You know, for Destiny 2, if you play that game, of course, Hunters are the best because they did win the Guardian Games. I told y'all they were going to win, but, you know, you could be mad at me if you want to, right? So that's what's going on with Resident Evil. Next thing we have is State of Unreal. A lot of updates for Unreal, texture updates. The world is going to be even more realistic. There's some tech demos floating around for Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra. We're going to share some reactions to that particular trailer. The game looks absolutely amazing. Of course, the acting and the metahuman stuff looks absolutely amazing. And I'm going to stop there. Definitely want to hear your thoughts on what's happening with the Unreal stuff.
Well, the Unreal stuff, I mean, it just means that our games are going to look better.
Much better,
right? I don't really touch upon that stuff. But it does, I mean, if I was a developer and I made my own games, I'd probably be super excited. All I know is like, okay, cool. You're going to make my games look even more polished. I'm not going to be mad about that. But if you want to talk about Marvel, I don't know. I think right now we might have differing opinions on that one.
On which one? The Marvel 1943?
Yeah.
All right, you go. I want to hear your thoughts on it. Let's go.
So watching the trailer, if I didn't know any better, completely just out of the blue, I would have thought that that was like a trailer for an animated movie. Like it didn't come across as this is going to be a future game.
Okay.
It came across as like this. Like, and it's true. I would absolutely 100%. Watch it if that was like an animated movie, but when it's
so that's a good thing.
Game, yeah, that is a good thing. That is a really good thing. But I can't say like as far as it being a game that I think it looks phenomenal. So I think the cinematics look great, yes. But we have been fooled so many times.
That's a good point.
Great cinematics and that looks fantastic, but they show no gameplay.
So I just have to say, okay, so chat, that is a good point that Daniela is making. But go ahead, keep going.
And that was the thing. Like I was watching, I'm like, wow, this looks really cool. Like, but then I was like remembering, I'm like, wait, it's a game. It's a game that they're talking about. They gave a great opening about what, you know, we can expect and what the storyline may be. But you don't show me gameplay, I'm not going to get excited. But if you tell me that is for, you know, a movie that's going to be on Disney Plus, 100%, I am on board. I am absolutely like stoked about it. Give it to me. I can't wait to see it. But you tell me it's a game? Nah. Show me gameplay first. That looks pretty. That looks cool. I am not impressed until you show me gameplay.
I'm not mad at that take. You know, I was trying to like disagree with you there. I don't think I'm mad at that take. You're right. We've seen so many games. There was a PvE game that they showed us a lot of visuals and, you know, trailers. But when the game came out, I don't remember the name of the game right now, which I don't know if that says a lot about that, right? It came out and I tried to play it. It was almost unplayable. Like it felt like the graphics were like 30 frames per second. And I'm like, well, you advertise all this amazing stuff for this particular title. And now it comes out and it disappeared just as fast as it showed up. And later on for that particular title, they try to add like 60 frames per second to try to make it seem like, you know, that was going to help the game survive. But we forgot about it, you know, fairly quickly. So I do agree with you that as beautiful as the game looks, right? And it does look beautiful. And I'm sure, you know, someone on YouTube, they're going to take all the cut scenes and put them together, make a movie. And you're going to be able to have your, the movie that you're asking for, because someone's going to do that. Right. And we're going to enjoy that particular portion of it. But if the gameplay is not amazing, as amazing as we're seeing what Unreal can actually do, we're going to be disappointed. And especially, is it Amy? Amy? That's, I think it's Amy. I don't want to mispronounce her name. But
for which?
For the story behind Marvel 1943. Is it Amy Hennig? I think it is.
Yes, it is. The producer.
Right.
Producer and writer.
Right. Amazing producer, amazing writer. And of course, we know that is going to be a story that we're going to remember, because everything that she's been behind, we remember those things, right? For sure. So I don't think that she's going to disappoint there. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to do with Marvel 1943, Rise of Hydra. Trailer was amazing. And you're right. It is a trailer. Once they show us gameplay, we can go from there. Any final thoughts? Any final thoughts? If you haven't already done so, make sure you like, make sure you subscribe. We do have the podcast here. That is how we do it. We just talk about, you know, real time, what's going on in our minds with some of the topics that we saw for that particular week. Definitely. Yeah, it's a true line to stand on, you know. No gameplay yet. I'm not mad at that. And I want to disagree, but you know, we're going to have to see. Definitely make sure you like, subscribe. I do appreciate that. Any final thoughts? Any other thing you want to mention before we get out of here?
I will also say that for a trailer, for a game announcement trailer to have no gameplay, you're just showing that trailer, it doesn't really give a good idea about, okay, what type of Marvel game is this? Is it a solo experience? Is it a co-op experience? It doesn't. Like, unless you watch the whole announcement and everything else it came with, but if you just came across just that trailer and you had to pick out what it is, like, okay, what is this game you're showing? It's great cinematics. I think that's what, for me personally, I kind of want to know what type of game it is, and I had to go and dig. And for anybody else that's wondering, it is an action adventure. You get to play as four different characters. You get to play as Captain America, Black Panther, Gabriel Jones, and Nanali, which is the leader of the Wakandan Spy Network. Those four characters are playable. And you know what? I really don't know if it's co-op, but it just seems like you can swap between those four characters. And you know what? That just drives me insane. I don't know what it is. I'm sorry. I'm going on a rant. Oh, the trailer that looks beautiful, except I am tired. I am tired of just being falling into the trap. And like I said in the chat there, that is their gimmick. They got to get you in somehow. You know what? I'm not a five-year-old kid that just loves Black Panther and it's like, I'm super excited. No, I am. I was going to say 40. I'm not 40 yet. I'll be 40 later on. I'm a grown adult that has to really think about where she's going to be placing her money, and I need that information before you get me all like hyped up and excited.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. That's definitely fair. Final thoughts. So definitely check out the content creation list that we have, link in the description below. It's everything that I've used since 09. And we shared some other things that we use on a regular basis when we're recording podcasts and video podcasts and stuff like that. But yeah, this was a great show. It got a little spicy a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. Got a little spicy. Chad, thank you for coming through. Thank you for supporting. We do appreciate that. And this is episode 663 of the show radio. Appreciate you, Danielle. Where can they find you?
Find me on my socials at Ms. BJM. And Andrew, where can they find you?
You can find me here. You can also find me at Uriah, URIYYA. And thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye, guys.